Hi, everyone. As you heard, my name is Sam Daly Harris. I founded the Anti-Poverty Lobby Results. I co-founded the Microcredit Summit. I founded the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation, and I coached CPL its first 7 years. As you just heard, I want this to be really interactive, so be prepared to unmute yourself and to speak up. The title of this session is Getting Real with Our Commitment to a Carbon Fee and Dividend, Creating Champions in Congress and the Media. And the description reads like this: it seems to happen all the time. I talk with a volunteer advocate from any organization, and they either say, oh, my member of Congress is so good, there's really no reason to meet with them, or my member of Congress is so bad, there's no really reason to meet with them. And I go, say what? So tonight I'm going to interview senior CCL liaison, congressional liaison. Jay, is your actual title CCL Rockstar, or it's a different title than that one? I'm going to interview Jay.
We'll go with a liaison.
Okay, great. On how he enrolled a Republican and a Democrat to create the House Climate Solutions Caucus. And they will help participants determine where their members of Congress are on the champion scale and how to move them up the champion scale. Our attention will be on CCL's carbon fee and dividend, but if you're from another organization, this conversation will be extremely useful for you and your issue too. So we'll hear from Jay in a moment, but I want to begin with a series of questions. If we agree that the farthest you can get from being a champion on carbon fee and dividend is being opposed, what would opponents do or say that would demonstrate their opposition? And what would be the next level up from opposed? So, like, it wasn't easy, but my member of Congress moved from opposed up to what? To unmute yourself, as you just heard, if you're on computer, lower left-hand corner, click on the microphone icon. If you're on the phone, hit *6 and give your name and city and go ahead and either let us know what the next level up is or what someone who's opposed would do or say to demonstrate that they're opposed. So, go ahead and mute yourself and begin. Who'd like to start?
This is Mary Selkirk in Berkeley. I'll start.
Okay, great.
And I'm actually, my question has, or my report has more to do with Congressional District 10, which is in Modesto, California. Okay. Very conservative Republican, Jeff Denham, who I'm sure was reelected.
Yes.
The question from that chapter to us, because there were a few of us in the Alameda chapter who helped start that chapter, they frequently write to us and say, what do we do? We've met with Denham's office. Now when we call them, they say, why do you keep bothering us? You know, we know what you're going to say. We're really not interested in meeting with you because we know what you're going to say.
Okay, so wait, you just answered the question. What would they say or do to prove or demonstrate that they're opposed? Now, we're not going to solve that right now. We just want to get these different levels. And then after Jay, who's going to give you some examples of people who said, why do you keep calling us? We're not going to do this, of what Jay did. And then we're going to open it up to everyone else. So that's great. So what would be the next level up from opposed? And what would, let's just start with that.
Sam, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, this is Brian Etling in St. Louis, Missouri.
Great, hi there.
Doing great. I would say that for me, it'd be like the next level from opposed, maybe be lukewarm or apathetic or maybe agnostic.
Okay, great, yeah, okay. And all of those are fine. This is not actual science. Mm-hmm. And if my member of Congress is a step up or two steps up, that doesn't mean they stay there. They may slip back down for a while and then do something that demonstrates they're a step higher, but they don't stay there. The word I use is neutral, but it's the words you use were fine too, from opposed to neutral. And it might be they're uninformed, it might be various things. So what would someone who's neutral say or do to demonstrate that they're neutral? And what would be a step up from that? So who wants to go? Give your name and city.
Hi, this is Alex Aminette. I'm in Big Timber, Montana.
Great.
And he would say, it's in God's hands, so there's really nothing we can do about it, but yeah, climate change is happening.
Okay.
Next step up would be, actually, it's not in God's hands, and we can do something.
Right, but if I'm neutral, and I move a step up, what would I be now? Not neutral, but I would be a what? Anyone.
Okay. And somebody who thinks, yeah, there's something happening and we got to do something about it.
Yeah, and they would be a supporter, let's say. They might have been opposed, then neutral, and then a supporter. So what would a supporter do or say that would demonstrate that they're a supporter, and what's the next step up from a supporter? Who wants to go? Just give your name and city.
So this is David in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
And, you know, one, maybe half step up from being neutral to being a supporter, or how they would demonstrate that would be to ask us questions about exactly how would you do that? What would you, how much would it cost to distribute the funds, et cetera, that sort of thing. So that's sort of a next step that we often hear.
So that's a variation of neutral. I don't know enough. Come on, tell me more. I need to understand before I can make a decision. Great. Good.
This is Lori Zuckerman in Idaho. I'm still hung up on just getting from opposed to neutral. In
right.
Idaho, and especially the rural areas, even where I used to live, if we just got past obstruction, that would be good enough. Just get past, because honestly, for them, they can't even, they have to deny climate change. They can't in any way be even neutral to it because they'd lose their seats. So if we could just get them to not obstruct, that's good enough.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about and what could you do to go higher after we hear from Jay. So what is the next step up from supporter? My member of Congress was a supporter, and then they almost surprised us when they actually became a what? What's another step from I'm with you, I'll co-sponsor that bill. Then what would be another step up from there?
Well, this is Helen from San Carlos. Next step up would be I'd like to join the caucus.
Okay. At some level, I would call that a supporter. I support this. And one way I'll support it is by joining the caucus. Another level higher is that is advocate. I'm not just going to support it. I'm going to advocate for it to others in Congress, to my community, wherever. So I want to suggest that if I support it, and then I want to go another level up, I become an advocate, kind of like we are. And again, I just gave a clue, but what would an advocate do to demonstrate, or what would they say? Any other kinds of things that they might do or say to demonstrate that they're an advocate?
This is Abaya. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they could offer to be a co-sponsor.
Where are you, Abaya? Are you in Gainesville?
I am.
Okay.
Hi, Sam. thank you for doing this. This is a great call. I think that maybe the next step up would be to offer to co-sponsor the bill.
Okay, that would be great. But if I were a co-sponsor, I would be a supporter of this bill. But if I said, I'm going to talk to the others in our delegation about this bill, then I'm not only supporting it, I'm looking for more supporters being an advocate for it. Great. And so let's go a step higher. if I were an advocate, but then I moved another step, and these aren't exact words, but you get a flavor for it, what would I be if I was even higher than an advocate?
This is Ellen. Would it be champion?
Well, okay, I'm going to make a distinction, not perfect, but that a step higher than advocate would be a leader and a spokesperson. The distinction I'm going to make, the next step up being a champion, is this. A leader might say, well, you know, I would really love you to speak at a town hall meeting or whatever. I would love you to go on the TV program with us, kind of thing. Be a spokesperson in a way. And that would be a leader or a spokesperson. The distinction I want to make is, and this is, I think a lot of organizations, when they talk about this, they cheapen the word champion. Anyone who's like going our way is a champion. And the distinction I want to make is a champion is bugging CCL to move faster. A champion is calling Mark Reynolds up and saying, Mark, I really have organized briefings in 10 different congressional districts, and I need your help in getting speakers for those briefings on carbon fee and dividend. They're kind of ahead of us, and they're kind of pestering us. So I'm trying to not cheapen the kind of boldness and audacity, the visionariness of a champion. So let's stop this for a moment and continue on with hearing from Jay, who is doing this kind of work in Florida. And I'm going to make this little introduction. Jay's going to show us how he moved members of Congress several levels up, with particular attention on Congresswoman Ileana Roslehtinen of Florida. Jay, you're a businessman based in Pennsylvania. You were doing your own thing on climate change in Capitol Hill. Then you bumped into Citizens Climate Lobby, and eventually, a Pennsylvanian, you decided to take on the Florida congressional delegation, and I mean take them on. So tell us about that decision, and especially your work with Congresswoman Ileana Roslehtinen, who was clearly opposed when you started. And congratulations, and please go ahead. You need to unmute yourself. Okay.
I believe I'm unmuted, right?
Yeah, you're great.
We're good?
Yeah.
Great, thank you, Sam. I appreciate that. And I think the answer to your question about why Florida, it became pretty clear to me and a number of others that if Republicans were going to cross the aisle and start working on climate change, it would probably happen in Florida first. So, and now this could happen in any state, but I think the lesson in that is know why you are approaching this member of Congress. No, try and have an angle of approach. And I think we all try and do that as we meet with our members, and we try and find reasons why we think they will be interested in working with us, and then we approach from there. So what I wanted to do was talk about a few of the concepts that I've used with members from Florida and Pennsylvania and elsewhere. There's a lot of commonality in the approach that I found useful. In moving these members along this ladder of engagement through these steps that you talked about, one of the first things I have found that is essential is frequency of contact. So when I started to call on these members from Florida and their staffs, I was not trying to move this along with one or two meetings a year. I was trying to be in their office two, three times a month. And there's a reason for that. It builds trust. It is simply having personal contact and frequency of contact builds trust. And I found that to be always true.
Excuse me one second.
If we go away.
Excuse me. Could you tell us why a Florida congressional office in South Florida, when there was not yet a group in South Florida, would want to meet with a guy from Pennsylvania? Is it because they meet with lobbyists anyway, and you had a certain quality that meant you're a good guy to meet with, or?
I think that a good answer to that, Sam, is trying to be useful. And that's sort of the second concept that I wanted to speak about. The only way to achieve frequency of contact is if we make ourselves useful to the member of Congress and their staff. So I try to give more than I ask for in all of these meetings. So, and to do that, we have to sort of pull back from trying to sell our concept all the time and try and help them. And that may mean going in with new information. That may mean going out into their district and seeing things that they can't see from Washington, which is often the case, and to come back with photographs, videos, make yourself useful. That's what I found. And so because I was trying to do that, it didn't matter as much that I wasn't from their district. I was paying attention to the district. I was working with people in their district, mayors, commissioners, chambers of commerce, and that made it possible to have that frequency of contact when I wasn't a constituent. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about is recalibrating. And this is like the third principle I go by. So we have frequency of contact, always be useful, and recalibrate. And what that means is, and I think this is really important for all of us to remind ourselves, if the approach that we're taking is not working, I heard someone mention that earlier on the call, drop back, reassess what you're doing, and try and figure out another approach, another angle to begin to make progress in this relationship.
Can you give us an example where it wasn't working with Congressperson X and you recalibrated how?
Yes, I'll give you a good example of that. When I went originally to meet with Congresswoman Ross Leighton's team. This was 3.5 years ago. I was going there specifically to see if they would help me form and join, if I did form, this crazy idea of a bipartisan climate caucus. And first meeting, I went with that ask. I thought it would be well received. And the answer was simply no, we do not join caucuses, period. And in fact, the legislative director told me we are joining the no more caucus. That's how much we think of caucuses. And so end of the line sort of for that approach. And so I dropped back and I tried to figure out what they might be interested in hearing about. And I detected that they were interested in some of the opinions of VIPs in their district. And so my recalibration there was to begin to enlist the voices of mayors and commissioners and chambers of commerce in the district. And there are people on the call like Abaya who helped with that operation, and that's what we did.
Could you just mention briefly the first or one of the first mayors or city council members you approached, it was easy, you couldn't get your call. What was that about?
Right, so we started to approach them to see if the mayors and the commissioners would join us in asking the Congresswoman to now sign the Gibson Climate Resolution. So we went to them saying, do you think this is a good idea? Would you sign a letter asking the Congresswoman to do this? And so that's just an example of a recalibration. And when we went in, then we went in with 50 mayors having signed this letter. And I said, will you sign this resolution? And the answer in the Ross Layton office was, we don't sign resolutions, period. So had to drop back and recalibrate again and say, well, now what's going to move them to the next rung on this ladder of engagement? And I'm happy to say that one of the next things that moved them was bringing a whole bunch of constituents to Washington, D.C., and having a meeting with the Congresswoman there. And that was a game changer.
And I'm sorry, was that you were doing all this stuff with the legislative director or whomever, but never with the Congresswoman, and this was the first time with the Congresswoman?
That meeting was the second meeting with the Congresswoman, but it was a breakthrough because she, you know, they pay a lot of attention to constituents. So these trips that all of us make from 50 states going to Washington are hugely important. But I also say that similar progress can be made in the district. And we went on then to set up. So the meeting with constituents got her attention, did not move her to the Gibson resolution. So recalibrate again. What will take us to the next level? And that turned out to be to set up a meeting with chambers of commerce and mayors in the district with the Congresswoman. And so these are just all like, I can never predict what will be the next step.
Exactly. And about how many showed up? I mean, maybe 50 signed the one letter and maybe more the other. But that meeting, were there 5 or 10 or 15 or something, mayors or?
16. 8 mayors and 4 chambers of commerce.
And what was the tenor? What was the tenor of that meeting? Very friendly, very no contentiousness, or just curious what that meeting was like.
It was very cordial, and after having been working on this this account or this office for about 2 years at that point. It was almost as if the Congresswoman were hearing about the issue for the first time. And but she paid a lot of attention and she took action within a couple of weeks of that meeting. But I want to be clear that the specific steps that this involved, it may not apply to another member of Congress.
Yeah.
But the point that I'm trying to make is when I started this, I didn't know what the next step would be. You have to try something, recalibrate, reevaluate, and then try something else until you start to see if this is making progress.
Okay, could you let me know if you agree with this? She started a post. I guess she maybe moved to neutral, like tell me more. I'll talk to these constituents. I'll talk to these mayors, and then she moved up to supporter. Is this true that she's not really, really moved up to advocate yet, where she's advocating and bringing others on? I'm just asking.
I would say it varies. I would say she moves between advocate and supporter.
One example of an advocate kind of action or that leads you to say that?
Yes, she has helped us reach out to some other members of Congress to join the Climate Solutions Caucus.
Okay.
So I would say that's a, you know, strong sign of her being an advocate.
That's great. And I want to make the distinction. She reached out to help us reach out to other, I guess, Republicans to join this caucus. Then she might have gone back to support her. In other words, she didn't live and stay up at advocate. Some people do. And, you know, she just rested back down to supporter, which is fine. But then that's the question is, how powerful is the local group or the Pennsylvanian advocate in helping her get back to advocate and then maybe even higher?
I think that's a great point, Sam. We are really fighting gravity here. And so the tendency is for these relationships to slip backwards. So to move down the ladder from advocate to supporter, if we're not there creating momentum and strengthening that relationship. So that's a really good point. And we'll meet with her this coming week in Washington. So maybe we can kick it up a notch from supporter back up to advocate. I'm hoping to do that this week with our constituents coming in.
Is there anything you'd like to add before we go to others and asking them, okay, what's your situation or what's the situation in Modesto or whatever, and what's your strategy to move them up? Anything you want to add before we go on? Because I want you to stay on and offer coaching with me as we hear from others. Go ahead.
Sure. So I think what I would like to add is just the thought that I always keep in mind that this lobbying is not a sprint. It's not even a marathon. It's more like a long distance hike. This is how I feel with every member of Congress that I'm working on. We're not going to accomplish this in a month or even months or a year. We are in this for Appalachian Trail style, Georgia to Maine, and we get up to the top of one mountain and we're looking at another mountain. And so I think if we keep that in mind, it is helpful as we walk through the valleys and the peaks, that this is long distance. We don't know what's around the next curve, but when we get there, we'll deal with it. And there is a destination, and we just have to remember we are moving toward that destination, and we will get there.
Brilliant. And so remember, we don't do caucuses. We're actually joining a no caucus caucus, and now she's on the caucus. We don't sign resolutions. Now she's signed the resolution. And so I want to hear from everyone else, but does anyone want to ask Jay a question before you tell us your situations? Give your name and city if you have a question for Jay, and then we'll go to your own members of Congress and the like.
Well, this is Ellen from San Carlos. Jay, I wondered, did you do this by yourself, or did you have constituents join you in these meetings to get mayors, to get the chambers of commerce together, and did you do this alone or with their partners?
How long? I know you started it alone. How long did you do it alone, and then you finally realized, I got to get some constituents?
Yeah, that's correct, Sam. I started this alone, and early into that, I realized we will need constituents because this, the Congresswoman Ross Layton, it was clear that she was critical to the strategy, but it was going to be a difficult sell. So I felt we must get constituents, and that's when I started going to Miami to try and meet constituents and form the Miami chapter. And Abaya, who's on the line, I believe, helped with that effort as I started going back and forth to Miami. She helped with the group start. And right after the group start, we had a small group, but a tall order in front of us. The Gibson resolution was in the works. And so there was a small team, I'd say five of us, worked on signing up all of those mayors, commissioners, and chambers of commerce. It was intense. We did it in about 4 weeks because the clock was ticking on that Gibson resolution. So in an intense period of time, we were able to do that.
Cool. One more question for Jay, and then we'll go to yours.
I have a question. Cindy Franklin. Introduce yourself. Yeah, Cindy Franklin from Bellingham, Washington. I'm curious your views of the staff members. Did you find them as more facilitators in your advocacy or in your lobbying, or were they more like gatekeepers? And were they the ones saying, no, we don't do this, no, the congresswoman doesn't do this, more in a gatekeeper position where maybe they were obstructionists?
I would say that, and I'd like to make a comment there that applies not just to the Ross Layton office, but sort of a conglomeration of others. I think we meet all kinds there. And some do appear to be gatekeepers and perhaps obstruction. I've dealt with that many times, we all have. And finding a way around an obstructionist staff member is really important. And sometimes your recalibration has to be designed to get the attention of the member of Congress and sort of get around that staff member. So there's staff members who are just wonderful at moving things along, and that is a much, you know, a great situation to work with. But if you have a roadblock, if you have an obstructionist, the job then is recalibrate, find a way around. And for example, with the Congresswoman Ross Layton, getting those chambers of commerce involved was a way around staff obstruction, because she might sort of be able to not pay attention to me. She might be able to ignore even a few constituents, but you get some mayors and chambers of commerce and say they want to meet, it's pretty hard for a member of Congress not to take that meeting. And that was why we went to that level, to get around some roadblocks.
Okay, brilliant, just brilliant. And so we're gonna go on and hear from others. Don't forget, I started this with people say to me, well, my member of Congress is so good, there's no real reason to meet with him, which typically means they're a supporter already and they can't see the possibility of advocate or leader and spokesperson or even champion or oppose moving up to neutral. So give your name and city if you'd like to tell us about your member of Congress. Either you're not clear where they are, or you are clear and you're not clear how to get them to the next level. Who'd like to go first?
Okay, I'll jump in again. It's David Klein from Boulder.
Great.
And our congressman for whom I'm liaison is Jared Polis, and he's a strong supporter. And we've had the same conversation a time or two that goes like, oh, you know, this is the right thing to do. This is what really needs to happen. And my hands are tied because Republicans.
Great. And so you're saying my congressman says this, and it's clear that he's a supporter. So my question to you is, are you not clear how to get him to advocate? Do you want to brainstorm or get some suggestions on how he could conceivably move the next level up?
In a word, yes.
Okay.
I would like those suggestions.
Do you have any off the top of your head before we give you some things?
Well, I'm thinking, so my strongest relationship, you know, I would say the congressman is a supporter. His key staff member that I work with is on the advocacy side within the office.
Okay.
You know, he's more gung-ho than his boss is.
Okay.
And so one thing would be to brainstorm with him, which I will get a chance to do next week, and to say, okay, you know, we know the ground just shifted under us. It's no longer good enough, you know, from my point of view, for you guys to be saying we can't do anything because Republicans. We have to figure out what we can do.
Yeah. So a couple of
getting what we have.
Yeah. So of course, first of all, you can point to the 14, if it is still 14 that are on the Gibson resolution. You can point to the 10 who are on the Climate Solutions Caucus as, you know, that's changed from 2 years ago, big time. So that's one thing. Another thing is, Jay, you want to throw out an idea about how POLIS could move up a bit from kind of a, sounds like slightly resigned supporter, but you have a thought on what you put out there?
Well, I do. And I think a constructive thing to suggest may be, as Sam said, there's a good number of Republicans who are working on climate change. And do you know about the caucus? And can we help you find a Republican to join the caucus with? Mm-hmm. And this step of the Noah's Ark method of the caucus, requiring a Democrat to have a Republican partner, actually, I think, is pushing people to become advocates, because that's a step of advocacy for a Democrat to start talking to Republicans who, and so you're sort of forcing them to take a step into the waters of advocacy. And maybe that would be helpful. It would give them hope, and maybe they would see that there are Republicans who'd like to talk about this.
Yep, brilliant. So, but did you suggest we could help him find a Republican, or are we asking him to find a Republican, or either?
We can make some, I'm sorry.
Yeah, can I break in for a second? Yeah, it's me.
Yes,
yeah, we've been there. We've done that. The staff member has reached out to, you know, 4 or 5 Republican offices and hasn't succeeded. It is willing to try.
Yes.
You know, and now the Solutions Caucus is actually short of Republicans. And so,
Can I ask you a question? Do you get in front of your member of Congress once a year or twice a year? Or only the aide? How is that?
Between once and twice.
Okay, great. So my question is, rather than the aide calling other offices, which is great, the question is, who does your member of Congress know in Colorado who's a Republican? Or your member of Congress is on this, and this committee, and there are Democrats and Republicans on that committee. So who does he serve with on committees that he could reach out to? I mean, it's like we got a new reality here, and we are better off than 2 years ago in terms of Republicans coming on to the Gibson Amendment, and we're worse off with a president who says climate change is a hoax, and he's got to step it up, and he's not stepping it up in a vacuum. There's some reason for some hope out there. So my bottom line suggestion is A, that face to face with him, you're asking, who is it that you like connect with on the other side of the aisle, on committee, in the state, or wherever? Sometimes these folks room with other members of Congress when they're in DC. That's number one. And then number two, what about other actions that just gets them into the pool more? Has he ever written a letter to the editor with your help or at your request, published in the local paper, expressing his support on carbon fee and dividend, or an op-ed kind of thing? Has he ever had a town hall meeting that you guys supported him in setting up on carbon fee and dividend with some professors from wherever, the University of, Colorado or wherever kind of thing? So any thoughts on those? And we're going to go to someone else in a moment.
Those are two great ideas.
Who does he know? Yeah. Forget the aide, who's great. You know, who's he willing to reach out to? I mean, he could say, I don't socialize, whatever, fine. And number two, go ahead.
Yeah.
This is Carol Kravitz.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Carol Kravitz in Los Angeles. Yep. And I just wanted to say that our congressman is pretty much he's a supporter. I don't call him an advocate because I've contacted the office about reaching out, to the Deutsch group, the Deutsch office, to try and get on the list of Democrats. And I've tried to get a list together of they won't do that because they don't want to show favoritism to one organization or another. And then I've gotten his committee, so I've identified some Republicans. They did give me a couple of Republicans. They just said, get vulnerable Republicans. And so we've been working on California Republicans and reaching out to chapter leaders in that area just to get a feeling for where they are. And I asked for some help with HQ about getting some chapter leader names. And I was told by Danny in a letter, a very nice letter, that they don't do that. They won't put chapter leaders together to try and come up with a plan to move the Republican in that direction. Because I got the feeling that he thought I was going to go in demanding, you know, that we want to get on your list, and, you know, when your guy's ready, we're the guy to go to. But, you know, that wasn't my plan at all. It's just build a relationship.
Yeah, let me interrupt for a second. What's the name of your member of Congress?
Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff. Okay, great. And face-to-face with Adam Schiff, not really, or once a year or twice a year?
I would say he's open to the June meeting to be mm-hmm. there, and our in-district meetings he hasn't been around. So,
okay. And
we will not be meeting with him next week because no constituents are coming.
Okay, no one from his district is going to D.C.?
Right.
Okay, great. So my question is, do you have any sense that he does town hall meetings in the district, or you haven't looked
into it? He does. Mm-hmm. He does. We're on the list to get invited to them, and we went to the gun violence town hall, and he always is very warm and knows who we are. And but getting him to be the advocate, he just will not reach out. He won't, like on the Intelligence Committee, I think there's a couple people there that might be moved, but he's not advocating for us at this point.
And is his district like Pasadena and Glendale and other places like that?
Correct. Yeah, okay. I'm in West Hollywood, so we go all the way to West Hollywood.
Okay, great. Yeah, so, you know, I would think about the whole business of getting face-to-face in the community. And some of these other strategies that Jay's talked about, is there a dean of a school of public of environmental science? I don't know if it's.
Yeah, we're trying to get some endorsements, of course, from Democratic clubs. I'm working on the city of West Hollywood. They're waiting until we have a bill. They want us to have a bill in Congress. I said, well, I need the endorsement to help us get the bill and to, you know, move it with our congressman, because that's in their district. So it's been challenging, and I just, you know, I'm anxious to move it forward. So,
okay, great. Good question. Your group, does your group typically have letters to the editor published once a year, twice a year, 10 times a year? And And do they mention Congressman Adam Schiff, hopefully in a good light, you know, that, you know, you're encouraged by his interest in this issue and look forward to working with him to move it even farther or something like that?
No, I haven't seen, we have a couple letters to the editor from his constituents, not mentioning his name because he really wouldn't be involved in the conversation of carbon fee and dividend and the subject of the article we're writing about, and there's really no way to connect that right now because he's not an advocate that I feel, well, in my way, for me anyway.
Well, let me just say, if you're, I think there's a little bit of we're not quite getting his attention going on. If you start having letters to the editor published in large and not so large newspapers around the district, mentioning him by name in a positive light, I mean, you know, acknowledging good things he's done and kind of encouraging next steps kind of thing, but all in all, it's a positive mention of his name. I think he'll see you, this is not the only thing, but he'll see you as, oh, this is not these five people or these two people or these 10 people trying to talk to me. They're talking to the whole community. What are they talking about? Let me pay a little closer attention to them. So I urge you to look to ways to get letters published in little and large newspapers in his congressional district, mentioning him in a positive light, but also in an encouraging light for next steps kind of thing. I think that's one example of getting his attention and moving the ball down the road a little farther. I think we've got about 5 minutes. Thanks. Can we hear from one more? Anyone, one more? And then I'm going to read you a little thing and probably close off. Give your name and city if you'd like to talk about your member of Congress.
Hi, it's Lynn Dash.
Hi there.
Hi, in New Jersey. And I did send a question in the chat.
Ask it.
We have a Republican member of Congress.
Yes.
Who voted for Waxman Markey in 2009, Representative Chris Smith. We are in a coastal district with the Mid-Atlantic has sea level rise vulnerability. We haven't even been able to meet with him in person. It's like he has really lost his courage. He got so much flack after that vote.
Sorry, I was reading, I was not reading the chat. Okay. What was that last thing? How did he lose his courage?
I think he lost his courage because he, of the vote, of the flack he took after he voted for Waxman Markey, maybe.
Oh, so you're saying Chris Smith voted for Waxman Markey?
He voted for Waxman Markey.
Okay.
He hasn't signed on to the Gibson. We haven't even spoken with him in person. We still are trying. We have a wonderful liaison with frequent contacts. We've met in the district office. We think some of the staff gets it, what we're talking about. Some are freezing us out. But we're still keeping at it. We have a lot of constituents, so far they haven't slammed the door in our face.
What is your name, Ken? Go ahead.
My question is, how do we help him get his courage back?
Okay.
And
yeah. Jay, go ahead. Questions. Let's hear what Jay's going to say.
So, on Congressman Smith, I think this is an important thing to talk about. When a member of Congress steps up on climate and suffers consequences for it, it is a setback. And often there's resentment from these members who've done that. There's resentment toward the environmental community because they feel like they weren't defended when they take a step forward. So I think it's a really good illustration as why when a member takes any step forward, the slightest step, we need to be overwhelmed them with gratitude and not just from ourselves, but enlist others to express the gratitude, other organizations, mayors, VIPs. We can't do enough of that. And each step along the way, if we do that, we'll make it more likely that they'll take the next step. I want to give you one example of that, and it goes back to Congresswoman Ross Layton. The day she signed the Gibson resolution, I was in Philadelphia. I got on the next train to Washington. And while I was on the train, I contacted seven mayors and Chamber of Commerce presidents, had them send me thank you letters addressed to the Congresswoman. I had them scan it, send it to me. I printed them out in color and took them to the Congresswoman within 3 hours. And I think that paved the way for her to see if she moves forward with us, we will have her back. and we will create goodwill for her, help to do that. And that enabled her to take the next step and the next step. And I think with Congressman Smith, if we can look for the smallest things to thank him for and start overwhelming him with that, he may be more inclined to work with us, and I'd be interested in helping in that process.
Yeah, let me just throw out, he's been on the Foreign Affairs Committee forever, and it's, Ileana Ross-Leighton's been on the Foreign Affairs Committee forever. So there's that Congress, he's been a horror on family planning, but then he's been a tiger on child survival. I'm going to close with this reading.
Thank
you. About a fellow, yeah, thanks. His name, this is like from 30 years ago. His name was Steve Volk, and he was a volunteer in Results. And his member of Congress, a Republican in Georgia, was one of just a very few that voted against famine aid for Ethiopia in 1985. And Steve said, we were so embarrassed to have him as our congressman. If this was like a sporting event, we'd be sitting in the stands with bags over our heads. We didn't even want to be seen rooting for this guy. And we talked to Steve, and he took a prayer that a Results leader had written for his congressman in Houston, Texas, that he'd had trouble with. And they inserted their congressman's name into the prayer, and they would read it at every meeting. And the congressman's name is Pat Swindoll. I'm going to read the prayer. Thank you, God, for Pat Swindoll. We know he's a good man who wants to do right in the world. We know he struggles with the same problems we do, closing our hearts to those who don't agree with us. There are no thoughts or feelings that he's had that we haven't had, and vice versa. We pray for all of us to learn compassion for people in our country and far away, for rich and poor. We pray that Pat and we will be less frightened of each other. We pray our focus will be more to love and appreciate him and less to change him. Help us to remember that sharing love with the world is the highest contribution we can make and will lead to children being fed and the planet surviving. Forgive our righteousness and anger. Open our hearts and minds to find the next expression of love for Pat that he can receive. And they would read this at their meeting, and then they'd go, yeah, right. And then they'd read it at the next meeting, and they'd go, no way. And then they'd read, after a while, it sunk in, and they started to meet the guy at town hall meetings and private meetings and, you know, with a handshake and a smile instead of a scowl, like many of the other groups that met with him. And within 2 years, he was agreeing to co-sponsor microfinance legislation and saying to Steve, I've got a column in the local paper. Do you think you could help me write a column so we can educate the public on this issue? And so, you know, Steve said, no, all of a sudden we had the most conservative member of Congress, in this case, Pat Swindoll, and the most liberal, John Lewis, on the same bill together. So that's an example of that kind of work from a long time ago. We're going to close off, Ricky. I'm going to close with a quote. I really am delighted that you guys are on this webinar with us and talking about getting members from opposed to neutral, neutral to supporter, supporter to advocate, advocate to leader and spokesperson, and leader and spokesperson up to champion. A champion would be like if Mark Reynolds was elected to Congress. That probably would be like, or maybe even Jay Butera or you. That would be about what, if you pester other organizations about what they have to do to move this thing along, you're probably a champion. Pester in a good way, I'd say. So this is a quote from Alex Steffen, and I'm going to repeat it. He said, optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who believe nothing will get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is looking at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insisting we can solve those problems. Once more, optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who believe that nothing will get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is looking at the difficulty and magnitude of the problems we face and still insisting we can solve those problems. End of quote. Jay, congratulations. Everyone else on this call, fabulous. Congratulations. Go for it. It's a real honor to be with you all. And this is really what's, I'm with our new president, this is what we got to do. Not say my guy's great, my guy's terrible. No, we got to move him up the champion scale. And I love being with you.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Sam. Okay.